Good afternoon, and welcome to From Where We Are, stories of news and culture, the lens of USC and Southern California. I'm Helena Gatelu, coming to you live from Studio B in USC's Annenberg Media Center.
And I'm Jolene Pumphrey. It's September 26, 2019. On today's show, impeachment inquiry, investigating the USC Health Services scandal, and pay attention, it's National Situational Awareness Day. All that and more from where we are. In early August, a whistleblower complaint was filed against President Donald Trump. Today, the transcript of President Trump's phone call with the Ukrainian president was released. Our reporter Nicola Wenz brings us the Trojan Democratic and Republican perspectives on this case.
USC Democratic and Republican club members speak out after today's impeachment inquiry. The president of the USC College Republican, Sahil Nanwani, says he thinks a large number of Americans do not support impeachment.
In the 3 hours after Nancy Pelosi first announced the impeachment inquiry yesterday, Donald Trump's campaign for re-election raised $1 million.
Nanwani says Democrats have been trying to impeach Trump for a long time, since before he was even president.
There are a number of different things that he's done along the way, but even the Mueller report didn't amount to anything. So now Nancy Pelosi is finally seized on an area that's gray enough that she can run with it.
The president of USC College Democrats not surprisingly disagrees. Ben Pierce is pleased that Pelosi and other representatives are finally stepping forward.
We need the American public to know what's going on. And I'm grateful that Speaker Pelosi and everyone else in this in the House finally agrees that exposing this for what it is finally the correct way forward.
Anna Tessier, the director of communications for Trojan Advocates for Political Progress at USC, says she is frustrated that Pelosi waited this long to start with the proceedings.
I think that she could have started it when we have detention centers all around the country for black and brown immigrants, or the fact that Trump has invited foreign leaders to stay in his businesses all around the country. I think there's lots of evidence that we could have used in the past 2 years to impeach Trump.
But the latest scandal tops all, says USC College Democrat President Ben Pierce.
He's asking a foreign government for help. What the hell is he if that's not impeached, that's not impeachable, I don't know what is.
No one knows how far the Democrats and Republicans in Congress will take this impeachment process. For Annenberg Media, I'm Nicola Wenz.
This time last year, Dr. Christine Blasey Ford accused then Supreme Court Justice nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual misconduct. Today, journalism school director Gordon Stables spoke with the authors of The Education of Brett Kavanaugh, a new book looking into Kavanaugh's past. ARN's Becky Sweeney reports on the event and how USC has changed since the Kavanaugh hearings.
Authors Robin Prograben and Kate Kelly talked about investigating the accusations of sexual misconduct against Brett Kavanaugh for their new book at the Wallace Annenberg Hall this afternoon. Prograben discussed how sexual assault is a timeless issue on college campuses.
That not everyone is equally equipped coming into a college situation to navigate some of these situations.
USC is no exception to this issue. Even before the Kavanaugh hearings, USC's campus was plagued by scandals of Dr. George Tyndall, the college gynecologist who was accused of sexually abusing student patients. Earlier this year, Dr. Dennis Kelly faced accusations of sexually abusing nearly 50 male students at the Student Health Center. After a year of scandals, USC's Eggman Student Health Center, where both Tyndall and Kelly worked, wants to focus on preventing any harassment or assault. They launched two new prevention programs.
We know that unfortunately this affects young adults, whether they're in college or not.
Chief Health Officer Sarah Van Orman told Annenberg Media that universities have a real opportunity to change the discussion around sexual assault.
We have structures, we have processes where we can, as a group, students, administrators, faculty, change what's expected, what's normal.
All incoming students now need to complete an in-person seminar about sexual harassment prevention, in addition to the pre-existing mandatory online training course.
But we know that by providing multiple opportunities for students to hear the information, by having it in person, they're engaging with their peers, they're having a chance to think about it in the context of their lives here at the university. Research shows that that's really increases the likelihood that students are going to be able to really incorporate those new skills and that knowledge into their daily life.
Eggman's Relationship and Sexual Violence Prevention Group, or RSVP, is also training student leaders how to be bystanders.
So, how do you step in, step up, interrupt and identify problematic behavior in your community or environment in your friend group and do something about it.
RSVP is working towards hiring 24-hour victim advocates to walk students through medical examinations and how to report an incident to the relevant authorities after an assault has taken place. Until that resource is available this December, students can still reach out to RSVP as a first step. For Annenberg Media, I'm Becky Sweeney.
In recent months, USC has been making headline after headline, and not always for the best news. The school's involvement with a myriad of affiliated scandals has been no secret. Match Volume producer Halla Osger dives into the subject with student journalist Sasha Urban, who reported on Dr. Dennis Kelly with Annenberg Speak and Project. Here's Sasha Urban on why he thinks it's important for new students to know about the scandals at our university.
The context is always important for any story, but for this one especially important because I think, and I say this all the time, but at a university in which most of the population is cycling out every 4 years, people forget. There's amnesia. It's inevitable. People are going to show up excited for their football game and not going to know anything about what happened 2 years ago. There are students on this campus who don't know about any of these scandals. But I'm glad to hear that you like clicked on the link and did your own research after that, because that's what we were hoping people would do. I also, even like me, someone who like spent the whole summer like doing as much research as possible on USC and learning about this story and all of that, I am still surprised with new scandals every few weeks. Like there's a new one that comes up. I'm like, I didn't know about that one. I just found out that there was a priest in our Catholic church on campus who was abusing students in the early 2000s. No one told me about that one. I had no idea. I forget his name. So even I, who think I like to think that I have a good understanding of the scandals at USC, there's always a new one.
Then what was it like being at the forefront of this specific scandal? You know, accusations and complaints and warnings were already given to the Student Health Center way before this article was published. And it really took these lawsuits and your article to get awareness out there. So what was it like being responsible almost, or being at the forefront really of this article?
It was a lot of pressure for sure, because this was definitely like the biggest thing I'd ever done journalistically and definitely the most serious topic I've had to cover. And there was a lot of pressure on me to like obviously make sure everything is accurate and correct, but also having emotional authority when I'm talking to these people in the story and having some kind of empathy because of the subject matter and because of the, like you said, the fact that this really wasn't something that people were aware of, and to have the full weight on me of like needing to communicate these issues to a broader audience, people who have no idea what's going on at USC or people who have some idea but don't know about this one. Because of that responsibility with the specific subject matter, there was kind of an added layer beyond the accuracy and correctness of the work that had to do with like emotional responsibility. So that specific factor within all of it was definitely hard to, because you can't really like, you can't like analyze that. Like I can't like think about how I'm doing in my work on an emotional level. Like how am I communicating things in an empathetic way? How am I speaking about my work when I'm not actually writing things in a way that accurately represents all sides of the story? All of that. That's just like an ongoing struggle that I have to like make sure that I'm not letting my emotions get the best of me. It's hard not to be like so angry about this all of the time, but I can't, because that's not my job. My job is to just put out the facts as accurately as possible and let other people get angry about it. I'm hopeful that, especially at USC, the attitude of, oh, this would never happen here, or this would never happen again, or this would never happen again, that attitude just goes away entirely, because you never know what's going to happen. And something that was clear to me from talking to a lot of people is that with any institution that employs thousands and thousands of people, and here the largest private employer in Los Angeles, you're bound to have bad people working for you. It's just impossible to like make sure that every person you're hiring is of 100% great moral character. That's not the question. The question is how you deal with that and how you prepare for those issues. So I'd like to think that the university will be able to implement policies that prevent these things from happening ever again.
To hear the full episode, check out Match Volume on uscannenbergmedia.com or subscribe to the series on Apple Podcasts. California primaries are coming soon, and LA County is hoping to revolutionize the voting process. Reporter Medina Zermeno has more on this story.
If you find yourself with a spare hour this weekend, pop into one of LA County's 50 vote centers to take part in a mock election. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday, people can try out what LA officials are calling the new voter experience.
This is a process that's been a decade in the making, and it's really been focused on improving and reimagining the voter experience through the perspective of the voter. So we've had the same voter user experience for over 50 years in LA County.
That was LA County Registrar Dean Logan, who unveiled this new innovative voting booth at a press conference last week. The new vote centers are a modernized version of traditional polling locations. Voters are greeted with touchscreen technology and an interface that makes casting your ballot much like operating a tablet. According to creators of the new system, voters have the option to make their ballot selections at a center or pre-select their choices via mobile devices or computer. Voters can then scan a QR code generated by their digital selections to make voting at centers faster and simpler.
The paper ballot is what gets counted. This device does not retain any record of the votes cast. That's what makes it different from the electronic voting equipment.
The new voting machines will also offer 13 different language settings that allow voters to customize their voting experience.
What we can do, though, is make sure that when voters have that intrinsic connection to voting and they show up to vote, that we offer them an experience that lives up to that.
Despite the city's optimism in this new system, the demonstration of the new machines last week did not run as smoothly as they have hoped. However, the county clerk's office said that catching bugs and flaws is extremely important. You can learn more about the mock election happening this weekend on the LA County Registrar website. For Annenberg Media, I'm Medina Zermenio, with additional reporting by Brandon Rowe and Alicia Morales.
Many famous faces have graced the USC campus over the years, but perhaps none has gained notoriety quite like O.J. Simpson. Kate Young has more.
O.J. Simpson formally charged today with two counts of murder.
In 1994, football legend and Hollywood star O.J. Simpson was arrested and tried for the murder of his wife and her friend. It was dubbed the trial of the century and garnered intense media scrutiny.
We, the jury, in the above entitled action, find the defendant, Orenthal James Simpson, not guilty of the crime of murder in violation of Penal Code.
But before Simpson was on trial, he was a shining star of USC's football program.
Simpson, look at that cut. O.J. Simpson, 64 yards.
His new notoriety came with an uncomfortable spotlight on the school.
I think everybody felt that O.J.'s actions were a betrayal.
That's Joe Saltzman. He's a professor of journalism and communication at USC and was teaching on campus during the Simpson trial.
Ironically, he was such a contributor to that USC tradition and legacy that he was considered something of an icon. And then for this icon to do what he did and bring shame on the university was more than a lot of people could bear. A lot of USC alumni went into literally mourning.
Simpson stood as a legendary black figure at USC. He attended during a time when the school was overwhelmingly white and still heavily segregated.
Students at that time really had very little to do with African American people. They were pretty much a secular white audience that didn't really know many ethnic people at all. They greeted O.J. like the second coming. He gave them wins, he gave them a championship, and all his students and alumni worshipped him.
Simpson's prowess on the field propelled him to a successful career in the NFL, and eventually to small Hollywood roles. But his public image was notably absent of any acknowledgement of race. In his famous Hertz commercial, he is the only actor who isn't white.
The superstar in Rent-A-Car.
You know it.
It has been widely reported that Simpson is no longer welcome on USC's campus, but a USC spokesperson said that there is no official policy. It seems that despite how the school may struggle with his legacy, O.J. Simpson is an indelible part of USC's history. For Annenberg Media, I'm Kate Young.
I'm Jolene Pumphrey. We're glad you're with us for From Where We Are.
And I'm Helena Gatelu. It's 15 minutes. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Coming up, the downfall of Juul, controversy regarding pedestrian traffic on campus, and the future voice of Amazon's Alexa.
Los Angeles City Attorney Mike Feuer and California's Attorney General Xavier Becerra launched a $1.5 million anti-vaping initiative at the Los Angeles Civic Center this morning. This is the latest development on a series of government regulations against e-cigarette companies marketing their products to children and teenagers. Just earlier this week, Attorney Feuer held a press conference calling for a citywide ban on flavored cigarettes.
It's the industry's shiny new object, the e-cigarette.
and the flavors that fuel its use, and the youth-oriented strategies that pitch its appeal. We now have a public health epidemic. We all know it. We're calling for a citywide ban on flavored tobacco. This settlement sends an extremely strong message to an industry that up to now has had very little regulation associated with it. Those companies are now going to be severely restricted when it comes to their marketing strategies. They will not be able to comply with this judgment and at the same time sell to kids, market to kids.
Juul, the country's main e-cigarette producer, exploded into the cultural scene across America in 2017, catching the attention of millions of young adults. Now, the $35 billion company seems to be on the downfall in the midst of health scandals and a criminal investigation launched by the state of California. Annenberg reporter Abby Washer spoke with several students and employees of smoke shops in downtown Los Angeles to find out more.
News of recent health scares due to the use of e-cigarettes has caused serious concerns among health officials around the country. Early reports linked dangerous lung illnesses to vaping. In just months, more than 500 possible cases of severe pulmonary disease have been reported across the country, and 9 people have died. Glenn, who asked us not to use his last name, is an employee at the Living Room Vape and Smoke Shop in downtown Los Angeles. He explained why he believes Juuls have become so popular among young adults and why they are often chosen over the classic cigarette.
The e-cigarette, honestly, the main difference is like the smell. So like regular cigarettes, when you smoke them, it's like you're burning the actual tobacco, so you get, you know, you smell like it. The e-cigarettes don't leave you any of that, so that's the main difference that I see in people buying it for.
The Los Angeles Board of Supervisors had a preliminary vote on Tuesday to ban flavored e-cigarettes and tobacco products in Los Angeles County. The restriction covers the most popular flavors of e-cigarettes, particularly for Juul users. The ban scares Glenn, as he is confident that prohibiting the sale of flavored e-cigarettes will significantly reduce his range of customers.
Probably, more than likely. Because if you just leave it at the tobacco and like Virginia tobacco flavors, most people don't buy those. It's a very, like, honestly, for the regular tobacco flavors, it's usually men that buy it. So they would be fine with it because they still like the tobacco flavor. But if you eliminated all their other flavors, you just eliminated almost everybody else.
While e-cigarette vendors may fear for their sales, USC students feel the same fear for peers who continue vaping despite the recent warnings. Jordan, a sophomore who also withheld her last name, had strong opinions about the importance of the ban. She stressed the side effects that she has already seen among her own friends.
I personally think that it should pass. A lot of my friends have vaped and been vaping for years, and I've seen a lot of the consequences of doing it, and they have become super negative. It's a lot of money. It's completely affecting their health. My friends who used to be D1 athletes are now literally struggling just to run the mile.
The controversy over Juul's most recently led to the replacement of the company's CEO on Wednesday. However, he was replaced by a veteran of Big Tobacco. In the meantime, some students were much more critical of the proposed ban, questioning its effectiveness among young adults.
I just don't know if, like, a prohibition basically is the most effective way to solve this issue.
That's Jamie Zug, a USC sophomore who says she understands what health officials are attempting to do with the ban, but has a hard time believing it won't come with its own negative results.
And people might start trying to make things at home and like doing DIY things, and like that's even more dangerous.
While it is now clear that e-cigarettes have the potential to be dangerous, they're still widely considered the lesser of evils when compared to cigarettes. Zug pointed out the irony in the strong reaction to recent vaping-related health incidents, despite the much more obvious threat of traditional cigarettes.
I think the big thing that comes with that is everyone's like, we know the effects of cigarettes. Like, they've been studied. It's a long-term thing. Whereas for e-cigarettes, we haven't had the time to, like, study the long-term effects, so people are treating it as, like, this kind of unknown thing, so it's, like, easier to antagonize what you don't know about.
With more cases of vaping-related illnesses being discovered every day, the future of the e-cigarette industry certainly seems ambiguous at best. For Annenberg Media, I'm Abby Washer.
Kevin Burns, CEO of Juul, stepped down yesterday, and the company agreed to stop all advertisements of its products in the country.
Did you know it's Latinx Heritage Month?
I actually didn't. Tell me more.
The celebration of Hispanic culture and history started on September 15th. That's the Independence Day for several Latin American countries, including Costa Rica, Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua. The celebration ends in mid-October. USC has created a celebration of its own to commemorate the month. Reporter Sarah Allegre has more.
Yesterday, USC La Casa and the Latinx community gathered at Tommy Trojan to celebrate the unveiling of banners representing the Latinx community. The artwork is found hanging across Han Plaza. Students and faculty gathered to admire the artwork of artist Paula Lopez, who collaborated with USC students. The scene was full of life with music playing and people of all different backgrounds dancing together.
To give people a chance to learn and to either learn more or celebrate your own heritage, or to learn and celebrate about the heritage of others. It's only through this and by doing this will we actually grow into the community that we are destined to be and that we so much want to be.
That's Vice President of Student Affairs, Winston Crisp, giving his introduction and gratitude to the artist Paula Lopez. Using vibrant colors and her artistic use of detail, Lopez encapsulated the Latinx higher education in her paintings. She shared how grateful she is to help honor Latinx Heritage Month celebration and how she hopes her art will help Latinx students feel more represented and comfortable on campus.
Well, that's why I do art, you know, to be able to share my artwork and to empower people and create dialogue and to provoke people into thought. And in this particular instance, to help the students feel a presence on campus, you know.
People love the Latin music and could not resist dancing along. For grad student Javier Hernandez, this was a step toward inclusion on campus.
It really feels like it gives us a voice, and it's a big step towards the future and involving us in decisions like us, by, I mean, our community, like the Latinx community for myself, but for many other people, it could mean different diverse backgrounds and communities to be able to have a voice in what we do, and I think that goes a long way.
Sophomore Kelly Cobos also shared how this event represents greater visibility for the Latinx community on campus. However, she felt this was just the beginning.
Starting to get more visibility on campus is definitely a step in the right direction. It's not like the only thing USC can do, but it's definitely a step in the right direction to, you know, improve the Latinx experience on campus and, you know, involve the community a little bit more.
Moving forward, USC La Casa will continue to throw community events for its students. This Friday, there will be a mixer with an Aguas Frescas table on Truesdale, where they will share information on what Heritage Month celebrates as students answer questions about a Latin America country. From Annenberg Media, this is Sarah Allegre with reporting from Alex Maria.
We have all been embarrassed at least once by an officer from the USC Department of Public Safety shouting at us to dismount as we skateboard or bike through the village. And Trojans are voicing their discontent one way or another. Reporter JP Hayes has the story.
This year, DPS has implemented an expanded policy that requires Trojan students to dismount and walk their bikes or other vehicles at all intersections on and around campus, and failure to comply may result in a ticket. That includes pedestrian-only intersections, such as Childs and Truesdale, where Tommy Trojan stands. Students have been generally frustrated by the recent policy, like engineering student Cassinave Kelchner.
First of all, the people who enforce the dismounting policy are extremely rude, which I don't really blame them for being rude because kids are bad listeners. But I think it's unnecessary that they have the dismounting policy because that is the plaza right there is the biggest space there is. So way less likely for people to run into each other. Whereas if you go down the road past like TCC, it's tiny. And this is where I see more accidents happening.
In fact, some students are taking the matter into their own hands, like Paige Raskin, who shared her personal disgust with the rule and went as far as writing a meme song that has blown up with support on the USC meme page on Facebook.
Lately, I've been walking because of this huge dismounting epidemic because it upsets me so much. I have expressed my disgust when I've seen actual DPS and campus security actually riding their bikes through the dismounting area. And then I'm like, what the heck?
This is her song, Enjoy.
Oh, look at that guy. He's just blazing through. He's not dismounting.
Well, you chase me, and you bet I heard it. I tried to be chill, but you're so dumb that I attempted to cut right through the crowd. Now I have to dismount.
For Annenberg Radio News, I'm JP Hayes.
It's National Situational Awareness Day. Jolene, Are you even paying attention to me?
Yeah. I'm just checking my email.
Mm-hmm, sure you are. For real, though, several USC students spoke with us about their awareness capabilities. Here's reporter Kate Johnston.
It's National Situational Awareness Day, and I'm not being safe because I'm using electronics in public. Here at USC, people commute by all means. They go on foot, they go on skateboard, they go on bike, some even go on Urbee or electric scooter, even though they're technically banned. But on Situational Awareness Day, today is all about being aware of your surroundings as you walk down the street. Let's see if USC students are aware of their surroundings. Hi there, are you aware of your surroundings?
No, not really.
Tanner White did not seem to be concerned about safety on USC's campus.
We got DPS and the blue lights and everything.
Hi there, it's National Awareness Day and I see you're on your phone in public. Is that something you do often?
Yes.
Abby Harris also doesn't think about her surroundings when she's on the street.
When I'm on my phone, I'm not thinking about it.
Her friend, however, did get hit by a car while crossing into campus from the USC Village.
She wasn't on her phone or anything. The guy just, like, didn't realize it was a red. She, like, broke her foot. It was really cool.
Karen Malie said she only puts down her phone while she skateboards.
I've had so many close calls with people staring at their phones when they're on a skateboard or on their bikes, so that's the main reason I try not to do it.
I crashed into Joe Zong as he was checking his email on his phone. Why do you check your email while you walk down the street?
Because I'm afraid that if there's any emergency, I need to, like, pay attention.
Like all the others, Joe did not even know that it's National Situational Awareness Day.
I don't think this would be a big issue.
For Annenberg Media, I'm Kate Johnston.
Alexa, introduce me to Samuel L. Jackson.
Honey!
What?
Where's my super suit?
What?
Where is my super suit?
All Amazon Alexa owners, listen up. Amazon has just announced that the voice of Samuel L. Jackson will be added as an optional feature on all Alexa products.
You can get this feature by simply saying, Alexa, introduce me to Samuel L. Jackson.
Cancel golf today.
It's off your calendar.
Good, because it's date night.
Big thank you to our two producers on Thursday's show, Luke Scorzell and Joshua Chang. And that's all we have time for on today's From Where We Are.
I'm Jolene Pumphrey.
And I'm Helena Gatelu.
Thank you for joining us from Where We Are.
Thank you.